So yeah, so today I want to share with you guys some work we've been doing, looking at kind of how we plan forest restoration using ecological site descriptions. And so it's kind of, we ended up being a two-part story, so I'm going to kind of talk about some kind of pedologic undertones to how we approach this to kind of start today. Just want to recognize co-authors. We've got a nice crew of folks, advisor Jim Thompson, some folks from the NRCS in West Virginia, as well as the Forest Service. So kind of background, so what are ecological sites? So to kind of put it in simplest terms, we are grouping soils and sites, kind of areas, by their ecological potential and their similar response to pressures like disturbance, drought, management. And so kind of the crux of what we want to get with an ecological site is a reference state. So we want to determine the kind of community that we want to manage for. So what's the healthiest state of a site? And this kind of gets tricky because we have to consider a lot of things, and often we're presented with situations like we see in these two pictures where we have soils that actually classify out to the same soil series, but when we go to sites, we actually see different forest communities on them. And so how do we tell the story, and how do we determine where we want to manage towards? And I'm going to talk about that a little bit with forested systems. And so how does pedology apply to this? So we kind of know from classic soil science that there's these variety of factors that affect what we see in a soil body. They're all kind of imprinted on there in the morphology, and that all kind of happens over time, and different things happen at different time scales. And that's kind of evolved, and we know that there's a lot of interactions that happen at different time scales in ecosystems. And really, we can't separate ecology from soil science and from pedology, if we're honest with ourselves. And so this kind of makes it an even more difficult puzzle to put together when we're talking about ecological site development and trying to figure out how we want to manage soils and forests and what way we want to go with things. And so how do we decipher this? I'm kind of going through the general approach that I try and take, and that I think in general ecological site determination it takes, where we first kind of start with historical context. We don't want to rewrite the books. We want to go and collect as much information about the history of the site as we can. So you see in this photo here, we have an old growth stand of red spruce in West Virginia, which is kind of the story I'm going to be telling to you guys today. And so the second thing we want to look for is observable soil linkages, so from pedology. So we know that there's certain soil properties that cause limitations for certain species, and that can be kind of an indicator for us as to where we want to manage for certain types of vegetation communities. And so the other thing that is even more powerful, if we can find them for a site, is look for pedomemory properties. So it might be isotopes or specific morphologies or chemistry that are indicative of the history of a site vegetatively. And so these can be real powerful tools for kind of helping tell the story of a site. And so within all this, we have to kind of keep ourselves in check and make sure we keep things practical, because there are some things that we might see in the historical literature that aren't really practical for us to manage for today. And so kind of zooming in on our study area, where I've been studying the last couple of years, the Central Appalachians, going to historical literature, it tells us that there used to be a lot more red spruce than what we see now. Especially because of the railroad era disturbance right around 1900, kind of decimated a lot of areas. We had clear cuts, and then following that, we had pretty extensive fires that burned off a lot of areas, and you can see the photo at the bottom there. And we see some areas that have not come back from that, but then we also see some areas that have come back from that. You can see that on the right. So we kind of know from areas that have come back what that looks like, but it's still, forest succession can be a little tricky after these kind of disturbances. And so if you look to the literature and pedology, and specifically kind of forest soils, and we're kind of wondering what happens when we disturb these kind of sites in the higher ridges of the Appalachians, where we think it used to be pretty much red spruce dominated. And so we know that there's some quick processes that can happen in these kind of conversions, where you lose O horizons, you lose soil organic matter in general, E horizons and pH changes pretty quickly. But the one thing we know is that in a lot of these soils where we have spotic properties, those tend to persist for a longer period of time. So they offer us a little bit longer window back in time to kind of figure out figure out what was going on. And so we decided in this particular case to use that as a pedomemory property to try and figure out kind of what the prior extent of red spruce and eastern hemlock associate used to be in these areas. And so we have a study going, and we have a good bit of data. We have 322 field pedon observations, and we went out and did 24 forest plots where we looked at composition and structure of the forest paired with pedons that we sampled. And this is right along the current transition between kind of subalpine conifers, so the red spruce communities and northern hardwoods. So we kind of look at this dynamic and kind of compare things in the current veg to the soils and see if we can tell the story. And so what we decided to do is try and model the occurrence of spotted soil morphology. And so in the field, all the observations that were made were given a rating of 0 to 2, 0 being no evidence of podzolization or spotted morphology, and 2 being a fully expressed spotted soil. And so we know that some of the indicators that we're using, color, smeariness, presence, and persistence of different diagnostic horizons, can kind of fade in and out of time based on those kind of more dynamic properties that that we know from kind of the literature change pretty quickly. And so what we decided to do is just try and model any evidence of podzolization in the soils, and to use that as kind of this pedomemory tracer. And so now, how do we know that really is that spotted properties really are linked to historic red spruce communities? Well, we're also lucky enough to have a really rich data set of witness trees, which is basically a database that's from the old property boundaries prior to the Euro-American disturbance in that area, that have tree species associated with geographic points. And so we decided to compare our spatial model, which I'm about to show you, with these point observations that we have from the past, essentially. And so we created a probability model of spotted morphology expression. You can see the blue areas are higher probability, yellow areas are lower probability, and we overlaid all these witness tree points, which you can see kind of spattered all over the place in black, about 1,000 of them, over this probability model. And so the probability model worked pretty well when we draw kind of a line through it and say, above this probability is spotted and below it's not. We ended up with about 70 to 80% accuracy using independent validation. And so we know we had a pretty good representation of the spatial variability of that. And so then we said, okay, let's compare these witness tree sites with that data. And so what we saw is a shift in the distribution in those witness tree points where you had spruce or hemlock present, which are the two main conifer species that we're interested in, versus sites that didn't have, that were just purely hardwood species, which is kind of the dynamic we're looking to show. And so that supported our hypothesis that these spotted properties were indeed linked to historic spruce hemlock communities. And so from the underlying model, it kind of controls when you go in and actually look at the random forest, the underlying variables, and we also looked at the witness tree papers that have been published on that data set, we're able to come up with this kind of conceptual model of where this particular red spruce ecological site that we're looking to create would be located. And so the primary driver is elevation. So when you start up at the higher elevations, you can kind of see in this imagery along the left side kind of a landform that sticks out kind of running north-south. And that's a higher ridgeline in West Virginia. And those blue areas you see are where you have predominantly red spruce communities. So those are higher elevations, and we get a lot of dominance with the conifer communities up there. But when you move lower in elevation, you start seeing more topographic control, so aspect and cold air drainages. You can kind of see that when you move a little bit further to the right in that image, in the area where we actually sampled kind of along that transition zone. And so we also want to look at this in our forest plot data and see if the data kind of was telling the same story. And so we looked at a measure of forest composition, so conifer importance, which is basically the average of the relative basal area and density of the two conifer species, hemlock and red spruce, versus the hardwoods. So that's on these x-axis here. And so we looked at that in kind of dimension space against the spotted intensity measure up here. And so we're expecting to see a little bit of a positive correlation, but we also see this kind of variation where we have pretty well-expressed spodosols across a pretty wide range of conifer importance. And so that kind of supports this hypothesis that we have a lot of areas that used to be red spruce and hemlock that where podzolization is probably the active and predominant soil-forming process that have been converted over to hardwoods, and so now we're seeing that those properties are spanning a wide range of forest compositions. And so then we also wanted to say, well, we also know that there's these faster-moving dynamics, soil properties, and O-horizon probably being the main one. And so we wanted to look at the current composition of the forest versus those, and what we see is a much steadier relationship, a much more consistent relationship between the composition and those. And so we think that means that these O horizons are adjusting to the forest composition, which has some pretty interesting restoration implications if we think that we can control O horizon thickness by changing forest composition, which is something you can do in forest management. And so kind of in conclusions, we were able to link the spodic soil properties as our pedo memory to the historic spruce hemlock distribution. It's kind of an example of this thought process for thinking about ecological site development. We were able to map it at a field scale, which makes it a pretty powerful management tool if you're planning for what you want to do with a forest. And it kind of helps us refine our concepts about what this reference community will be for this conifer ecological site that we're developing. And so if you want to see more, we're given part two of this. We're actually talking about the kind of nuts and bolts of ecological site development and how you use that to specifically plan forest management activities tomorrow, 3:05 p.m. in the Naples Ballroom. So that's all I got.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any questions?
The model was just based on field estimates, but we've run a good bit of lab data as well, just to kind of make sure what we were seeing in the field makes sense. And so, you know, running ammonium oxalate extracts and looking at, you know, the translocated sesquioxins and whatnot is the main way we're. And so they match up pretty well, the observations. So.
Yes, Mark.
It looks like you have some good relationships, so I believe everything. But I was interested. You know, you sort of talked about land use and things like that. What about, like, acid rain? Did you consider that as something that played a part or not at all?
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely been a lot of research done on acid deposition. And there's actually some folks at West Virginia University looking at that right now. What they found is on a nitrogen kind of deposition gradient in the area that they're not really finding, at least currently, a whole lot of effects on productivity, especially in the conifer stands. Now, hardwoods is probably a different story. The literature kind of goes back and forth on that. It's not really a closed subject. But I would say kind of in emerging literature, there seems to be more adaptations, especially in conifer communities that are kind of resilient to that, especially the soil effects of acid deposition. So.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thanks again.